I call the November 1st, 2022 Committee of the Whole Meeting of Glencoe Park District to order. Lisa, please call the roll and note the time.
Right, 7:03. Commissioner Bourne?
Yes.
Commissioner Covey is absent. Commissioner Snyder?
Yes.
Commissioner Spain?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes.
Okay.
It is our practice not to address questions at this time. However, we will take comments under advisement. Is there anyone who would like to make a verbal comment? If so, please limit comments to 3 minutes per person. Lisa, did you have anything you needed to read?
Nope.
Okay, very good. So, moving on to Village Staff Overview and GPD Board Discussion in regards to the Village of Glencoe Comprehensive Plan. And we'd like to welcome Phil Corrali, Village Manager, and Lee Brown from the Village. And Phil, you're up first.
Okay. Well, thank you, first of all, for allowing us to speak with you for a few minutes this evening. We have included in your packet tonight a brief memo, and we're not going to certainly go over it word for word, but what we wanted to do this evening is really just introduce the fact that the Village is commencing its comprehensive planning process. Our current comprehensive plan was first adopted in 1996. There was an extensive review of Chapter 10 of that plan, which relates to our downtown. That was approved and ultimately put in place by the Village Board in 2016. But the comprehensive plan really is a 20-year long-range view of the land use in our community. And so we're about 6 years past due on it. The pandemic did nothing to help us get that underway more quickly than we wanted to, but here we are, and we've gotten started. You may have seen some of these postcards sitting around town. I'm going to pass these around just for you to hang on to. But our plan is has been named All in Glencoe, and the public engagement process has just begun. A significant part of that public engagement process has been us, the staff, and our consultant. Lee Brown is with Tesca Associates. Tesca's been working with the Village for well over 20 years on a variety of land use related projects, and has been a consultant to the Plan Commission for that entire period of time. The idea over the next coming few months is to really just begin the dialogue in the community around this plan and what it means for Glencoe. And we are going out to all of our partner governments. We will be participating in all of the Village's boards, commissions, task forces, and committees, as well gathering their feedback and their input at this very early stage. This is by far not the last time you'll see us. We'll probably be sick of this all-in-Glencoe concept by the time we actually adopt, the Village Board adopts the plan, which we hope to be in approximately 18 or so months. But this really is your first opportunity to dialogue with us. And Lee is going to walk through some questions that we have proffered to you. The one point I would like to make is I know a significant portion of your meeting this evening, once we get out of your way, is going to be talking about your own master planning process. And we don't want you to feel like tonight, when we're talking to you, you need to think about or give us absolute feedback on exactly what you think the Park District's needs are going to be over the coming several years. That's a process you are just embarking on. Some of the questions were phrased in such a way that may have made it sound like you've got to look back to look forward. We don't intend for that to be the case. But one of the members of the Village Board, who you're all very familiar with, Dudley Underdunk, did indicate to us, because he is actually a liaison from the Village Board to the comprehensive planning process, that the Park District had done a fantastic job, which we already knew, of putting together and executing on your master plan. And we wanted to make sure to acknowledge that and say if that's something that you'd like to share feedback or insights on relative to our comprehensive planning process, you would be welcome to do so. We would love that feedback. But it shouldn't be what necessarily you look to share any insights with us tonight. The other point that I'll make, and then I will get out of the way, is Commissioner Spain is your liaison to the Plan Commission. Tonight is also to get things started in your thought process so that you can continue to funnel feedback to Carol as she brings that information back to the Plan Commission in the coming months. As I said, this is a long and extensive process. You'll hear from us again, but we just truly appreciate you giving us a few minutes of your time this evening so we can walk through this. All right, Lee, is that a good segue for you?
Yeah.
Oh,
my.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, let me feed off what you were just saying, and respectfully, Commissioner Spain's position, she's going to have a responsibility to act in between our two organizations by way of, first, collecting your responses, bringing that back to the Plan Commission, but that's not one direction. It's got to also allow the Plan Commission to identify things that it is hearing, it is concerned about, and bring them back to you. So we included a link that doesn't appear to have worked, and we'll figure out another way of getting you that link, to a quick poll about these same questions. I want to defeat the purpose of saying that's an important thing. It's really a matter of convenience to respond in that poll as opposed to having an extended conversation that we're taking notes on and coming back. What I'm trying to say is we hope that you can have these conversations about the important issues that Park Board sees in the community as a whole and bring those to us so that the Plan Commission can address those issues. But we also suspect that you have individual issues and concerns as a member of the community, as a leader of your family, about things that are occurring in the community. We hope that you'll engage with us on our website and through the comment mapping and the other tools that are available on that website. So let me go back to the questions themselves. And I'm trying to suggest that we're not looking for details, as Phil has just indicated, but we're looking for this to raise things in your head about issues that you're likely to face and that we're likely to face that you can bring to us. So the overall question has to be, what are we facing? What changes do we have coming to the village that we may or may not have control over? Changes in behavior, changes in the needs of our community because there's demographic changes, changes because technology comes upon us and changes the way we communicate, changes the way we interact with facilities, changes in the behavior of kids who no longer want to go to soccer practice, or the next big thing is pickleball, but beyond that there's three more things that are going to come down the line, and that has an impact on your facilities. Does it have an impact on the way you and the village can work together to assure that the activities that are brought before the community serve the community's needs? We don't write a comprehensive plan as a map of exactly what's going to occur by 20 years from now. It's a decision tool that's used to set policy so when the question arises, there's a policy that allows us to make better decisions. So as you consider relationships, your existing master plan calls attention to the fact there are some things that are potentially workable when the village and the park district work together, or when the park district works with the school district. We'd like to hear how to enhance that working relationship, how to think ahead about the physical needs of the community, to consider where we can share equipment, share maintenance, share approaches that reach out to the community. If those are things that you think about regularly and this is a way for us to be on the same page, that will serve our needs as we put together the conference plan. I'm going to stop talking because I think we're...
Can I just add one thing to what Lee said? And I do this more as an opportunity to just trigger thought, and again, not something that you have to share this evening. A big portion of what we've started talking about relates to some of our more recent projects and plans that have been presented. A significant one that we all spent a great deal of time talking about was the Hoover Estate and the 13 or so acres that made up that single parcel of land that went through an extensive subdivision process that started pre-COVID and finished during COVID, but involved literally dozens of hours of public discussion. A portion of that focus as we look into the future is what happens, what do we want to look to differently, what structures should the village put in place from a policy standpoint that would help guide that conversation differently in the future. How does that relate to the park district? What sort of needs, if there were to be a significant changeover in a large private piece of property in our community, and I say that probably with the mind that there's really only two, and I don't anticipate that it would ever be something that we have to deal with as a community, but I used to work for the village of Northbrook, and I'll tell you, when I was there, nobody anticipated Green Acres Country Club closing. We want to make sure, as we are thinking through our comprehensive plan discussions, that we are putting in place considerations, policy recommendations, that if something like that were to happen, what needs to be the priorities that we focus on as a community? Because the park district will be impacted if we were to see a significant turnover of one of those parcels of land. The park district would have a service level impact, and not a significant one, potentially. How do we put in place zoning restrictions or policy structures that ensure that that is a consideration on a going forward basis? I think it always would be, but we want to make sure that given what we learned just a couple of years ago with Hoover, that those opportunities may present themselves, and we don't want to be on our heels for that. So I just offer that as an example of some of the things that we're going to begin dialoguing over and contemplating from a policy development standpoint.
Another thing that goes with that really is climate change. We can't ignore the fact that we have largely an infrastructure based in pipes. Stormwater has already shown evidence of significant changes in peak storm events. We have changed some of our regulatory responses to that, but nonetheless, in a mature community like Glencoe, stormwater turns out to be one of the most consistent issues that a community faces. Other issues like, you know, the need for a very effective bike and pedestrian network that in some cases is broken in the city and needs strengthening, particularly east-west. So we look at this as there are, you know, there's a new Trier grad who talked about knowns and unknowns and unknown unknowns. There's a lot to that in that we look to things that we know may happen. How can we get out ahead of the change that we can reduce the radical change if it happens all of a sudden? We need to be in front of it.
So now we will shut up.
Now we will shut up. And invite the fact that we're not here to collect all of this in the next 14 minutes. if this can be a conversation that leads you to responding either in writing or, more importantly, through Carol, we can come back or we can do it through a continuing discussion along the way.
look at that.
So I'll
go ahead, Mark.
Thank you.
So I'm excited about the long-term planning and for the village and coordinating with the park district and schools and all that. It's different than what we do. The park district does a lot of planning for projects and planning ahead, and they take time to roll out. This is really a different level, and it's hard to figure out what are the priorities right now. So as I looked at the question, it was hard to say, well, I can come up with a few things, but then I'd be forgetting things that are even more significant. So my thought was, I'm excited about the prospect of getting this done and doing ours at the same time, coordinating with you, but my feeling was, wow, it's really preliminary. And if I said something, and nothing really jumped out, but it might be the wrong focus or something relatively insignificant compared to, let's say, the stormwater issue.
There's no wrong answers to this. All we're doing is raising issues that we can research, provide a sort of alternatives approaches. We start in a big, long process like this with evaluating our values, our current conditions, the issues that face us, the sort of alternatives that could be addressing those issues, and selecting from them. That's likely to be the same steps that the park board will go through in evaluating the physical part that you're responsible for.
One thing that would be really helpful is just a quick, like 1 minute summary of newer stormwater issues. I was on the VNC a couple of terms ago, and I had discussions with Larry Levin, and he talked about the stormwater and having done things downstream that sort of reduced our issues. But I know there have been heavier rain years since then. So are there two or three things that you could point to that say, well, we've had washouts, or we've had flooding we didn't have before, because I'm just not aware of those, and how might those affect the park?
You know, I think it's happening in a variety of different spots and at different times. And I say that from the standpoint of we have had some very intense storms in the last couple of years that have dropped 3 inches of rain at the south end of Glencoe and a half an inch of rain at the north end of Glencoe, which seems fascinating when you think about the fact that really stem to stern are only about, you know, a little less than 3 miles. And how the intensity of the storms have changed, the duration of some of the storms have changed, and the frequency of some of those storms. We're beginning dialogue within our own staff about how do we begin to adjust assumptions that have been engineering standards for many years in terms of the capacity and the size of stormwater systems to accommodate a typical rainstorm when rainstorms aren't typical anymore. So that is a part of our thinking. And I will say we're very early on in that component of our thinking as well. How do we integrate in our own stormwater planning best management practices for greener infrastructures? Are there ways for us to integrate permeable pavements in certain locations? Working with the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District of Chicago and finding solutions in partnership with them that reduces the amount of stormwater that makes it into the sanitary sewer system, which causes bad things to happen all the way downstream into MWRD's service area. So when I think about it from the standpoint of where Glencoe has vulnerabilities, I think it's that we have invested well, we have invested significantly this year. We are finishing right now as we speak a large-scale project, which really is the fourth phase of a four-phase project to move water from really the downtown area, so focused on Greenwood Grove, all the way west to the Skokie Lagoons. And we're now installing a large-scale pipe underneath Skokie Country Club to accommodate that flow and take it as quickly as possible so that the system doesn't back up, doesn't charge, and we see stormwater rising on the streets.
You must know that we're a bike kid, and water flows typically east two directions,
yeah,
towards the lake if you are at Green Bay Road, you're going east or you're going west to the Silver Hills. And the potential ways of addressing the stormwater are different in those two regimes.
Fair enough.
And so our issues in the lake frontage is how to prevent erosion of the ravines and how to manage the flow rate as opposed to necessarily the volumes of doing those.
So as we look at stormwater best management practices, all of our ravines sit, and Wendo has more ravines than any community on the North Shore. All of our ravines sit on private property, which is unique. So working with private property owners and the village making investments to ensure that those outfalls are secure and that they aren't causing that significant erosion that you mentioned, but also looking at runoff. The EPA is continuing to adjust the requirements that the village is responsible to maintain, both on stormwater runoff and on water quality for water production. And so we are going to be seeing significant changes over the coming 5 to 10 years that are going to significantly impact us. So that has meaning when you talk about stormwater as well. How do you hold back the bad stuff from getting into the places where you're going to have to pull that bad stuff out again so that you can produce water for the community? So I didn't really answer your question in terms of where are those specific problems, but on kind of the global sense of this 3.8 square miles that we call Glencoe, we are going to be dealing with all of those types of situations, even though we have invested, I think, very well over the last 25 years in our stormwater management systems.
We're always in catch-up.
Yeah, we spent, as you know, significant money on Cock Park, and it after the previous renovation, it was flooding on the walkway, whatever. So yeah, there's different objectives. Whereas like we would like Dry Park, and we say where can we hold the water? I didn't know if you had any ideas west of Green Bay Road where you would want to try to have this.
You know, I think we would look at it in a sense of where is the system undersized? What sort of storage or detention? Is underground better? Is at grade better? Are there opportunities? And I would say there isn't one specific thing that jumps out at me. We've talked, Lisa and I have had many conversations over the years of partnering opportunities. Not everything works well. The problem sometimes is that your stormwater management problem is over here, and your places to deal with it are over here, and you somehow have to get the water to go from one place to another, which is where the cost is. And so there's also the cost of detention. There are examples of great stormwater management projects that have been partnerships between school districts, park districts, and municipalities that have created really great new facilities because you had to change the entire nature of what was there in order to find a way to hold water. I don't know if we have specific issues on that grand of a scale here in Glencoe right now. As I said, we are continuing to analyze how those stormwater specific incidents are impacting our stormwater management system. I will say there are areas, shared road continues to remain a problem. It's not under our jurisdiction. It's an IDOT roadway. But those stormwater management systems that exist underneath shared road were designed in the 1920s and in most cases installed then. That's going to be an area that we know we're going to have to spend some time and resources to work together. And that may be, contemplating that may be where we do have to partner with another unit of government. And it may not be in Glencoe. It may be a more regional set of partnership opportunities. But I think knowing that the Park District is a willing partner from the standpoint of at least dialoguing about what may be possible becomes an important part of how we contemplate what those changes start to look like.
You heard of Carbon Tree, right? The MPRD did a study to show that creating capacity can be sold to others. Creating capacity can be traded. And so the potential for public creation of storm capacity in either underground or in green capacity can be bought by someone who needs it and can't put it on their site because their site is too small or it's impervious.
When you talk about the other parcels of land, like Hoover Estate, are you referring to the temples, the country club?
Or probably the country clubs, okay. More so than anybody. But even that is, as I said, we have no indication that that would ever be a situation that the community would have to grapple with. But those are the largest undeveloped parcels of land that we have left. Obviously, Glencoe is landlocked. Skokie Country Club, I think, is about 135 acres. Lakeshore Country Club's just slightly larger. And again, there's no anticipation that that would ever happen, but it's curious because in the 1950s, we were flipping through the village's subdivision plan in the 1950s, and there was a proposal to develop all of Lakeshore Country Club at that time, with four rather large streets full of houses that probably would have accommodated 200 to 300 in total.
And at the time of the 96 comp plan, there was distinct discussion about what would Skokie Country Club be if it wasn't a country club.
Yeah. And so as we grapple at the broader level with things like housing affordability and accessibility, how do you maintain a housing stock that really meets the needs of a full community from cradle through older age? And that is something that you start to think about when you contemplate what could happen or what might happen were one of those large parcels to become available. You know, our subdivision ordinance as it exists today is a bit unique. Other communities around us have something that is called, you know, the Planned Unit Development, the PUD. We don't have that here at Glencoe. So our zoning code really governs development opportunities. Those communities that have PUDs have the ability to flex in certain ways those zoning restrictions to accommodate different things, whether it's open space, whether it's additional density. I don't know that we'll ever tree protection. I don't know that we'll ever get to a place where we have a PUD, but that may be another component of that discussion that comes up. How do we deal with maintenance of open space when you have, as we dealt with Hoover, really a commercial model that is to some degree focused on getting as much as one can out of a piece of property. So, and yet still perhaps there is a need for open space management that the park district might need, or facilities, or something that impacts our school districts. Those are all components that we want to be mindful of in any sort of potential development.
Given the time, I'm going to say there's only, I'll leave you with one last area that I think that may be significant, and that is the issue of public health. The question of whether or not we can drive a healthy community. And your activities are directly related to the health of our community members. But there are other issues that may not be in your mission to provide. I don't know that there are. I'm just saying that's an issue that faces a community that wants to be sustainable for the next 100 years. You support the kind of community health. Does that mean that there needs to be clinics? Does that mean that there needs to be more trails, more public facilities for getting people out of their house and stop working out of their bedroom, like some people have?
Just one thought real quick before you go on. I fully appreciate this. One of the things I was thinking is, I don't know exactly what the process with the Hoover Estate was, but I can imagine that it did involve conversations between the two of you, and I'm sure others, to ensure that the park district's requirements were met when you were doing the planning process. And I think all of this has benefited. Everything going forward now is benefited by the fact that we do have two executives that have a very good relationship and communicate frequently and are used to working together. And I think that will drive this. One of my concerns, and I'm sure other people have thought of this too, is the weird idea that we're both doing this at the same time, and then the problems that may occur because people are just sick and tired of answering. These surveys are substantive. You know, it's not a quick, it's not like the postcard. This is really digs down with lots and lots, really deep. You have to put some time and energy into it. I am somewhat concerned about overlap, too much overlap. And, are we going to rush to get our survey out first so we get a better response? We're not. But, you know, it occurred to me. So making sure that the confusion that already exists in town as to, wait, is that the village or the park district? People don't know, and frankly, they don't really care, and I don't blame them. They just want things to go smoothly and stuff to be good, and I get it. So is there any thought, any energy put towards trying to make sure there isn't too much overflow between these two processes and just tiring people out and confusing them further, because you've got questions on your survey that are so directly related to the park district, we're coming at them with a survey of our own. You know, just, it's something, I don't expect an answer, just something to kind of like keep in the back of your mind as you embark on this.
Lisa and I are meeting to talk about it on Monday. And I think part of the struggle always is, and interestingly, the library is doing a survey right now. And, you know, the desire is always to be as inclusive as possible, to get as much public input and feedback as possible. And then sometimes there's so much to respond to that they don't respond at all. And I think what we want to be very mindful of is that as best as we can, our process is probably going to be longer than yours. Maybe not. But I know ours is going to be long. I know it's going to be somewhat slow and methodical. I think it's an opportunity for us to highlight the fact that the work that the Park Board is doing does also feed into the work that our Plan Commission and ultimately Village Board will do on a larger, broader scale, and to try to do our best to differentiate the process and the plans and what they mean. And sometimes they're similar nomenclature. We had a very extensive dialogue prior to kicking off our process about what to call it, because we understand what a comprehensive plan is, because that's what we do. But most people don't know what that means. And so how do we make sure that we're speaking in terms that the community understands? And so in doing so, how do we make sure that we're not stepping on your toes? So I think that's going to be incumbent on us at the staff level to make sure we're communicating regularly and keeping everybody in the loop on it.
And that, I think, is going to happen. So I have no concerns for that at all. Is there anything Carol has?
Yeah, well, I was going to make a similar comment, Lisa, because I think my concern is that about the fatigue or the confusion, but I think there's maybe some benefit here. One is, I believe we've already gotten feedback as part of these surveys about the parks, so we can already incorporate that.
Yeah.
And then the other thought is our values and feedback are probably, we'd want them to be similar because it's the same community. So maybe we can even use some of these results and pare back what we're asking
for.
So I just do think it's interesting because this has been so visible already to have another survey in there, but I mean, there's advantages to that too. It could make our process easier. Maybe not. I'm being optimistic, Lisa. I'm saying we're getting feedback. That'll be a challenge.
Yeah, our surveys won't be going out the same month. They'll probably be going out 6 months apart, you know. And hopefully, you know, then that's what we're talking about. Can we take out any park-related questions and put them in our survey and then share the data with the village and vice versa, because you already see the boards. I don't see us doing a board like they're doing now, because they're getting the feedback on park district stuff already. So I anticipate they'll share all those stuff and maybe not even include that in their reports, because it's more park district and put it in our reports. So we'll work, figure out how we have to do all that. It is weird that they're both happening at the same time, but ours requires every 10 years.
And there's
going to be. Lisa and I started about 6 months apart.
Yep.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
When I got here, we were just starting the downtown tune-up process, which was the downtown plan that I referenced before. And one of the things that was being discussed at that time was the Park District was going to commence a master planning process. And should the village speed up its comprehensive planning process to go at the same time as the Park District's process? And ultimately, that didn't work out for a lot of reasons. And here, we're here now talking about that.
Again.
While you're talking about your second one.
Yep.
So I'll just leave that out on the table. But the reality is there are synergies and there are drawbacks.
Yep.
I think it's trying to recognize them and make sure that we are continuing to share the feedback through the feedback streams that we each are going to have through this process. If there is something that's directly applicable to the village, to the Park District, we're going to share that, and I know that will happen vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
We're already, as Carol said, starting to get comments on the All in One Co. page that are really not even applicable to a land use plan, but I think sometimes feedback is feedback is feedback.
Yeah. Yep.
And so we get what we get, and we're grateful that people engage, but we will be sharing that with you guys for sure.
Our website couldn't last as long as the comprehensive planning process itself. If there's a point that you need a spot on our website to promote your survey or something else, please let us know.
Yeah, we will.
That's colonization.
Let us know how many comments you get on a dog park. Probably like 250.
Dog parks and porta potties is what I noticed.
Yeah.
Dog parks and porta potties. And Chad.
As a parent of two small kids, I'm grateful for the porta potties.
Yeah. Yeah.
So thank you. Yes,
thank you. Thank you. Have a good evening.
You too.
Okay, so we are going to move on to our discussion of upcoming Glencoe Park District comprehensive planning, including master and strategic plans, and Lisa Shepherd will lead that discussion.
Excellent. Well, it was a perfect segue. This was planned when the village asked to come to this meeting, or one soon. We already had this on the radar to start talking about this. It doesn't mean we're starting tomorrow. Actually, what I want from the board is to tell us if we want to embark on this, because we have to budget money for it. Last time we did this, it was about $120,000. It's not a cheap process. Do I think it's going to be as much this time? No, because when we did it last time, we had nothing.
Mm-hmm.
If we end up going, doing RFP and say Hitchcock gets, they did a lot of that work already. They're ready, right? So they don't have to rebuild it. They'll just build upon this. Mm-hmm. It is recommended that every 10 years, so it may be different in villages, but every 10 years at Park Districts, undergo a master plan, and every 3 to 5 years they go through a strategic plan. It is tied to our accreditation, so you know where my thought is. We go up for reaccreditation in 2025, and we would have to have an updated master plan. Ours would have been over 10 years old, and in accreditation it says you have to have a master plan every 10 years. So that's kind of why it's all figuring in this time.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention that we have accomplished a lot in our master plan,
yeah.
Right?
Yes.
And now there's some big items that we really need to test the pulse of the community. You know, we know that our maintenance structure, our facility is really, really past its useful life. There's going to be a point that our bonds from this building will roll off, and very soon, 2025. So it's all happening at the same time. If we wanted to talk about if we wanted to go to referendum to not raise taxes but keep them the same, it would be prudent of us to have that master planning and that community survey already done before we go in that direction, right? Otherwise, we might get criticized. The pandemic has changed a lot of the way, and trends. how people are thinking.
Yeah.
So I really want to talk about, and that's why some of the stuff in our survey is totally different than the villages. We talk about programming, we talk about, you know, lifestyle choices, health and wellness, and things like that. We haven't done a community survey since about 2013, 2014, because our plan was finished in 2015. We actually started in about 2014, end of 2013. So that's why I recommend starting to go down this path. We would not even start this until after the elections. So we're thinking not till after elections. We don't know what happens. It depends who's on the board. If there's new people, there's not. We know how much time, if there's new people, how much time they have to get up to speed. So it could not be until about August, September, October that we even start. Last time, it takes about a year if you do it right, maybe a little less because we don't have to build it from scratch. Last time we did a community survey, we did some kind of interactive, really innovative things with our feedback. The ones that we do for our master plans have a lot of experience doing these, so we go up for RFP, which I showed you an example of what the RFP would look like, are very, very knowledgeable in park district plans. I am talking to Phil. They are doing a community survey. The school district, the library, we all met with their vendor who I think they're going to use. It did not work well for the school district, the library, and I don't know if it'll work well with us because they're so focused on village items. And they're not really focused on park districts. When you go with, when we do surveys, it's more people that do park districts all the time. The village has said they have a lot of questions in their survey that totally address park districts, and they need that for their village, I guess, accreditation. So I'm going to be asking them, hey, is there a way to pull out those questions and put them in our survey and then give you those results? I don't know if that meets their needs or not. There is a lot of concern when the villages survey, there's so much park stuff in there that it confuses people who owns what. And as you can see by their portal, that's giving all that information. So the school even gets a bit about that. They ask school questions too in their survey, and they're like, that's not yours. So it's kind of that fine dancing line between the two. I think by doing the process at the same time actually could help us think of things that we could pass on to the village. You know, some examples are should we talk about, do we want more land? You know, if these little parcels are coming up, do we want to purchase those? Should we be setting aside money to purchase those items? And in that case, should, say, the golf courses or country clubs go out of business, that we have money and savings to purchase a portion of that or just open land that side? You know, it's things like that we have to talk about. Talk about trailways and things like that, how we can connect to the park district.
So, are they doing a faculty meeting?
They must be. There's, Eileen just walked by and...
Yeah, right?
That was just such a weird thing.
I was thinking there's got to be some overlapping in data gathering for all of these, and are we paid... Does every organization pay separately for, like, their demographic information? And there's a lot of, like...
No.
I guess, thinking about underlying things where you're getting to understand the future of the community and the demographics. And certain things, there's got to be... overlap in terms of information you need.
That comes more from, like, demographic, because it comes from the census.
It's just that's, so you're not paying anyone to get this information.
Right, exactly.
Right? Okay.
Exactly. We're not paying for that portion of it.
Okay.
Exactly.
So it's just the actual
survey
that we're kind of helping to take.
Yeah, and the other stuff in our master plan, we haven't added lots of, you know, acres. There's not, like, a big switch in everything else.
I mean, we really used that survey over the past 6 years.
Oh, we have.
And we've referenced and run it, and it's been useful. So I don't see any reason for us not to do it. And we do fall back on that a lot when we're talking about our plans and explaining
and
why certain decisions were made. So I think it really helps us and has helped us a lot.
Yeah, and I think it is justifying because your job as board members.
Yeah.
are not to do what you want. You might come on the board and say, you had this whole, if I want to do this, and then you really see what the community wants through the surveys and through the master plan, what we have in our everything from ADA, our infrastructure studies, and then you're like, oh, well, I may have this idea, but really what's best for the community is X, Y, and Z, and using those to justify it. This board and past boards have done a phenomenal job following their master plan and strategic plan. You know, it hasn't been, any of the boards haven't been rogue and said, nope, I don't believe in that. I'm just going to do my own thing. Really good, which is what a really good board member does, is follow that. That's why I think it's so important to do another one.
And isn't it kind of lucky that this is post-pandemic, because so many people have changed, have focused on what's around them and physically near them, and thought about their parks and what's easily accessible and what they can get to and what they can use in a really different way, I believe.
I believe too. It'll be interesting.
And the demands and the interest has changed. So it's really good that we're doing it now.
Yeah. It'll be very interesting what people still want from their community, right? Mm-hmm. So, do they still want walking trails? Mm-hmm. Probably, but we have a lot of families that are moving into the community, and it would be interesting to hear what they want also.
Yeah.
And then just looking at our, having a new eye of looking at our infrastructure and, you know, things that we put as high priority, now those have all been taken care of. What else are we now missing that we should do? What other priorities? Should we put more priority, more money towards sustainability? Things like that, or a diversity, or, you know, whatever.
Yes.
So, so really, that's what I'm looking to see. Is this something that you want to venture down next year so we can budget? And then I wouldn't look to send out this RFP for a little bit. So it may overlap more, depends on the village takes. It might overlap towards the end of theirs is when we're doing ours. So
close.
Or I can send it. So I can send it out tomorrow, because March is when the new budget year will be. So it would be up to the board to decide those dates, and we don't have to do that tonight.
Yeah.
I just want to know if this is something you want to do. Or seeing that the village is doing it, go, oh God, I want to do it at the same time. Just know that it risks a couple things. Our accreditation, it risks the ability maybe to go for a referendum, because we won't have that data to back it up. But we do have the data from the last master plan that said that that is an aging infrastructure. That was 10 years ago, and it was stated as something that should be repaired.
Yeah.
So,
moving it on to ours, presume, would you like to speak on if you'd like to move this forward?
Yeah, absolutely. And the question is, how soon? So Lisa Shepherd just said maybe August, October is when it starts. How do I say this diplomatically? So as the village is doing their thing, if we were doing it at the same time, would there be more sensitivity to areas where they might look to the park district to take floodwater, do things where we don't really have an answer, but if we were on the same track, we could say, well, we've done our research, and here's what we want. Or here's what we find the community wants from us. I just wonder, I'm not recommending anything, I'm just sort of saying, does it really make sense to do them on a more similar time frame so as issues come up for them, and we can say, hey, does that work or doesn't work based on our extensive thought? And I guess I'm saying this as a question. I don't have a recommendation. I'm excited about doing it. I think it's obviously a very good idea.
So I think our process could start and end before they're even.
Yeah, I do, and I do think he had said 18 months, and we're thinking a year. I think it might
could be faster.
As opposed to just waiting for.
There?
No bus.
I think a year as opposed to a year and a half.
I mean, if they said it's just that. We just know how things move. I feel like ours. I personally don't think we should pay attention to their So there's that much. If we could pull questions, great. If their survey comes out first, of course we should look at it and try and like not overlap, obviously, but I think we're gonna be like not on the same time frame, yeah. In my opinion. Just based on Over the years,
yeah. What we've done, yeah. And we look, our missions are they're different.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. As why we want, of course we want to work with the village on stormwater management, but that won't be a focus of ours, right?
Yeah.
It will be for, as far as our flood parks, what approach do we want to do to address those flooded parks? You know, it may be the passive parks we want to do more, the rain gardens and perennials and things, but athletic fields we want to put in drainage that we have to have dry. You know, it'll be a little bit, it'll be different than what the village mm-hmm. embarks on, the questions that we're looking at. Would you guys agree?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How long did complete it approximately once we start? We started next August.
We've been really good at facilitating these things and moving them fast. So 6 to 9 months, I'm guessing.
Okay.
And that just, it depends when we get whatever consultant. It really depends if we've used consultants before. So I tend to like to use consultants that really know our community. Mm-hmm. So we've used Hitchcock before. We've used, while it's under a different name, Barry Dunn Consultants. They know the North Shore, they know us, so they're off to a running start before some other ones. But we just have to see how their prices come in compared to other agencies. We do, you know, our focus groups won't be as, it sounds like they're going to go to every single one of their groups and we'll do focus groups. Well, we might do focus groups all in 1 week and be done with it, you know, or 2 weeks or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
To bring it to our like front advisory committee of early childhood, WAT, the board, and then just other community stakeholders, we might be able to go through that process a little faster.
Yep.
The hardest part, I think, of any master plan or strategic plan is the survey questions.
Yep.
That's without a doubt the hardest part of any.
Mm-hmm.
How to ask those questions, that it's not too many.
Yep.
Because believe me, we talked in great depth with the village and the school district, should we just do one big community survey, and we're all like, no one will fill it out because our questions are too broad.
Yep.
Then we started going, should each of us do their survey every 6 months? So the library is doing theirs already.
Mm-hmm.
That's fast.
Yeah,
and then we go 6 months later, and then they go again. That's enough time between them.
I think so,
you know.
Too.
So that's a big part of it.
Yeah. So are we all in agreement that Lisa can understand that we support this and move
and
forward
budget
with
money.
The budget and move forward with whatever the next step is?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Good.
Yeah.
Carol.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess I would say I like the August to October 2023 start, and
you
I
do?
Like finishing within 6 to 9 months.
Okay.
So
I like that.
I like those a lot.
That would be a good expectation.
Yeah.
So I will put that in my
good.
Notes.
Okay. Great. Then we will move on to our discussion on Fund 65 and 69. Lisa and Kyle will lead the discussion.
All right. I'm like, Kyle, you have it all teed up.
All right. So, jump right into our discussion about Fund 65 and 69, items for consideration for fiscal year 2024. And if you're interested at any point, just stop, ask questions, slide, or then whoever works best for it. So we'll start with the completed projects for fiscal year 23. Gerrymander number 2 was the largest ticket item from this fiscal year. The take of gym floor refinish was also done during the shutdown period. IT upgrades and improvements took place throughout the year. And the staff run house windows and tuck pointing project is ongoing, with the tuck pointing being completed and the windows anticipated to be completed over the winter. The ticket parking lot lights should be getting done this fall. That is a zero-cost project due to the comment incentives we were able to capture. And the early childhood lockers should be getting done this winter as well. So those are the projects that were budgeted for this year that have been completed.
Really quick, Kyle, the ticket lots, those are all LED, correct?
They will be. So
yes.
The project is not complete yet, it's scheduled to get done this fall.
So there'll be that's also energy savers with that. So.
So yeah, all the existing parking lot lights are not LED, will be converted to
right.
LEDs.
And I really think how much the air handling units cost that we should do ribbon cuttings for those. It's the same as playground.
Group access is right across. So that takes on to the carryover projects. These are projects that were budgeted to be completed this year and were not for a variety of reasons. First and the largest would be the Kimby Hall AV project, which we've talked about several times. This project is delayed due to long product lead times. So that carryover project value would be $92,000. We also have truck 7 replacement. This truck we're replacing with the Kubota RTV. It'll save the district about $25,000 to $30,000 of upfront costs. It'll also be more fuel efficient and kind of meet the needs of the park staff. Also reducing the fleet by the single truck will not impact our ability to carry out the duties that are needed with the truck. The final item that we can carry over is the early childhood entrance structural study. This is related to the ramp in the front of the David Center for early childhood access. There are signs of settling and cracking along the ADA rampway that leads to the entrance. What we wanted to do is make sure that study to understand what underlying issues might be causing that cracking. It is not an imminent concern, but it's something we definitely want to have looked at. Alongside of the structural end, we'll look to see if we can improve ADA and stroller access to that part of the building, as well as the interior and exterior doors to kind of open things up a little bit and cut down on congestion.
It would not change the look of the front, though, that iconic front structure, just so you all know.
Basically, the existing ramp was poured over the pre-existing stairs. So I think the thought is we want to understand the substrate, the substructure, and make sure that it's going to be addressed in any future work that we would do there. But yeah, no intent to change the aesthetic of the building. Any other carryover project questions? All right, so we'll move on to our proposed projects for fiscal year 24. Number one, is probably most pretty familiar, would be the final of the three air handling unit rebuilds. So this unit, like the other two, were installed in the 2008 facility renovation. They're at the end of their 15-year expected life. This particular unit serves the community hall, community rooms, downstairs fitness, ceramics, and offices. So it's a pretty substantial chunk of the building that's climate control and air filtration through this unit. As I said, it'll be the final of the three units that were replaced in sequence in fiscal year 22, 23, and then proposed for fiscal year 24. This is the last of our units that are run on R22 refrigerant, which is a discontinued refrigerant, so it's very hard to come by and extremely expensive when you need to purchase it. Long lead time again, so we're expecting a slight price increase. This year's unit costs $205,000. I should have a firm proposal from the U.S. Mechanical sometime in the next week or two, but the $215,000 budget item is what I consider a reasonable estimate for air handler number three. Any questions on air handler number three?
I know, it kills us. It kills me.
Yeah.
So much money, yeah. But you know, if that goes down, then we can't have programs, and you know, angry staff because we're hot.
What's the expected life?
So 15 years is generally what's assigned to those large mechanicals. Every year you go past it, you're risking serious failures that would lead to emergency repairs and extended time frames where your unit is not running, and that happens in summer or winter, you have problems with, obviously. Keep humidity in freezing conditions.
Is there much maintenance every year with those, or
no? So we have an annual maintenance agreement with Midwest Mechanical, so they'll come out and do the regular service and repair any issues that come up along the way. I don't have a detailed breakdown for this particular unit of what repairs have been made over the years, but each year that you get past that 15 years, kind of like a car, you're just exposing yourself to more and more sunken costs on a unit.
I didn't know if like years 1 to 5 was just changing filters or something simple like that.
Say again?
I didn't know if like years 1 through 5 would just be something inexpensive like changing filters.
But years 1 through 5 should hopefully just be belts and filters.
Okay. Okay.
And then as the later into the life of the unit you get, you run into issues with compressors and coil leaks and things of that nature.
Okay. Can we anticipate that this is going to be more energy efficient?
It'll be comparable, certainly from the one that is there.
Yeah.
It will be the same unit as air handlers 1 and 2 that were installed previously.
Okay.
But compared to the 15-year-old unit, yes, it'll be more.
It has to be. So there's a little bright side there.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know, not a sexy project.
Yeah, no.
There's no paper here, I can say it.
Of course, it's the largest of the paper, so that will move on to a fun project. So this is the early childhood sensory and staff workspace room renovation. So this is the proposed renovation of an underutilized space in the early childhood wing. The current room is kind of an oval half moon shape, and it's an underutilized space. I don't know if Bob, if you want to talk to the use now and the proposed.
Yeah, right now, it certainly does not have a bathroom, which makes it very difficult for the assigned in the classroom for CFS licensing. So we're looking to use it more efficiently as an outdoor space to have there. So we come up with these two various uses.
And before it was shared with GGK, they no longer, when we renegotiated the contract, we needed the space more than they did. So we took this back. So,
it would be to split the larger room into two, one half to be the sensory room, including some pictures of Western Suburban Special Recreation Sensory Room. So it shows just typical elements that you would find in a sensory room. We also have a floor rate similar to that of the and the second half would be a staff workspace. Here's where they get one-on-one meetings with parents, a laminator, some different elements to kind of get them out of the group offices. Total project cost, there's a range here depending on furnishings and finishes. We're going to budget $150,000 for total project cost. The expectation is that half of that could be funded through special rec funds. The sensory room, and the other half is in Fund 65. We're working with White Company, architect for Watts, and they are in the process of giving us design drawings to advance this project if the board so chooses.
Is this the room where we had, when we brought in breakfast, is that room?
I believe that's the room that's for the bagel. It's kind of a curved one, really weird. Yeah.
Is there crossover for the sensory area for the larger population, or is it really going to be focused on children with needs for a sensory room?
It's a great question. Originally, it was for the children in the program on sensory or speech therapy or other needs. They've used that in an access array. But again, it is a secured wing, so when you run a lot of participants who have DCFS files on location, we'll be looking at how to best utilize that.
Great. We have more and more children on the spectrum that this room would be very useful for, and we see more and more park districts going this route, putting sensory rooms in their community centers.
Right. Not just, I don't think I know what a sensory room is. I've never heard of this before.
So it's good. This room is used for multiple purposes. One of the sensory is you can see this child here with the lights on the wall, so they may be having trouble integrating into a classroom. They take a break. They might go and the decals on the walls in the wing, being able to touch them, feel them, and that can tend to calm them down or make them feel more included, and then they can refocus on getting back into the activity. So it can be a space for a break. Mm-hmm. Currently, if there's a child who has maybe a behavioral issue, they go into the tap gym and they might throw some toys at the wall to get rid of some energy or to refocus. This will give them a dedicated space.
So this isn't like an enrichment room, it's like actually for...
So there may be something hanging from the wall that they can pull out of and climb on, nothing too high. There's going to be opportunity for speech therapists to work in there. And then it's that NSSRA room too that we're currently having to use the hallway if a child needs a break from.
Okay.
So if we bring if someone has a one-on-one aide right now, a lot of times they come up and say hi to daddy. So this will, just a place to calm down, and it's different sensory things, and not just for children with AIDS. It could be just that a child that's having a hard day at home, something happened, and they just need a place to just be by themselves to breathe.
Occupational therapists coming in, helping children deal
with stress.
And then we just have five additional 3-year-olds that require speech therapy. So we're seeing a lot more diagnosis with our preschoolers, so having that space makes
Good. Great.
And right now the speech therapy takes place in the hallway?
Yeah.
I think then this is a good move. Yeah.
And we don't really have a good place for
this.
As we added coordinators in, and they have more one-on-one meetings with parents, we don't really have a really good, or for a teacher to have a discussion with the parents.
Yeah.
There's not a good place for them to go. So that's why this workspace room renovation, if a parent comes in and wants to talk to a teacher, they now have a place to go that could be
Yeah, I'm sure you guys have thought a lot about this, so great. That's very, very good.
Further into design, we'll bring elements in the sensory room. We'll have things to
discuss.
Let me show you. Interesting. Yeah.
Great. Next, we have lots of pickleball courts. We talked about this several times. This is addressing the community's demand for dedicated pickleball courts. It's an underutilized space over at Watts on the hockey rink, obviously, from March until November, essentially goes unused. We'd be looking at installing six total courts, sport court modular system. It can be installed in the spring, removed in the fall, stored, and then reinstalled again in the following spring. It's available through Sourcewell, so with a cooperative purchasing agreement, so we wouldn't have the need to go out to publicly bid. And we're going to budget $100,000 for the project. $80,000 of that will be for the courts themselves. $4,500 for a storage unit to have it stored in a secure, dry location in the off season. $3,500 will cover cleaning, installation, and removal in the spring and the fall. And $10,000 for miscellaneous items for nets, tables, chairs, shade structures, things to make this space not just six pickleball courts, but a pickleball court area where people can play and enjoy themselves.
It's a very social sport, so we've learned from other park districts that are putting in their courts now that they really want more tables, big tables. This is kind of an area the sun beats down, so we'll have to put umbrellas up, and so you know there'll be a social component, so money will be budgeted for that portion of it also. And how much would it cost to put a regular pickleball court in if we put new in? Like a tennis court.
So if we had a piece of land where you were to put in a bank of six pickleball courts or three tennis courts, I believe that price last I heard was like the $600,000 range, $700,000. You'd have to find a space to accommodate that. So this is the perfect location where it's unused.
What is the maintenance cost going to be? Is that just for the storage?
So
or is the take down? Like, what's the annual cost?
So the $3,500 is the annual cost. The number of the proposal is slightly less than that, but I'm going to account for some inflation on that into next year. So that $3,500 would cover the cost of the company coming out, cleaning the modular tiles, installing them in the spring, and then in the fall, cleaning them, stacking them, and then we would store them in the storage unit. Mm-hmm. It may not seem like a lot, but a single court is about a pallet that's 8 feet high, so it is time-consuming. It's something that we could, in the future, consider in-house, that the professionals can have it knocked out in a day and a half.
And usually that's our busiest time of the year, so if we want to dedicate, make sure these are open first thing, and with our team is everywhere else, I mean, it's a good idea to budget that.
You could learn how to do it and see if it's something that makes sense to do yourself. What's the lifespan of this surface?
I believe the products, when we were going through this process, the product was 20 years expected life.
Wow.
But that would probably be for a system that sits out 365 days a year. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to be a little unique in that we're going to store these things for the real kind of rough months of the season of the year. So if a 20-year life expectancy on tiles that sit outside for 12 months a year and we're going to have them out for 8 or 9 months, I would anticipate 25 to 30 years.
We'll have to see what the wear and tear of picking it up and down too, because that'll be unusual too. So it's kind of we're kind of guinea pigs here. But and just to make it clear so everybody's manage your expectation, these are recreational courts. We did a lot of focus groups. People go out and they're playing, and the recreation players really liked it. They actually really liked it for their knees. It was really good. The professionals, competitive people, they were a little bit more critical of it, right?
A little bit, but not a lot.
We're trying to cater to recreational players, right? So that's who our main
we just want to get more people playing on these courts. So I think it's a great use of the space that we've been trying to figure out a good way to use this space for years. So I'm just so excited about this opportunity.
Yeah, that's right. Okay.
So we have truck number 6, a Chevy 2500 replacement. This is the oldest truck in our fleet, 22 years old. It has, as you can see, significant body deterioration, ABS brake system issues, and four-wheel drive issues. We would replace this with a Ford F-250 with a cloud package and a liftgate package. This is an extremely long lead time product, budgeting $60,000. If the board is in agreement, we would probably start the process of getting that truck ordered now, with the understanding that it may be 12 months, maybe 18 months, I don't know, 2 years. So, you know, I think we would start the process, and if something were to change, we could back out of that purchase well in advance of any delivery. We did look into consideration for an electric truck, electric vehicle. Unfortunately, for this particular truck, is a medium to heavy duty truck. The 2500 replaced with an F-250. The only electric trucks on the market right now are of the light duty variety, so an F-150, which you couldn't accommodate a plow package on or lift gate stuff. It just wouldn't fit the need for replacing a medium to heavy duty truck. But it is something when our F-150s come up in replacement schedule, it's definitely something that we would look at. So just to be aware that it was a consideration. Any questions on the truck?
What is so unique about it that it's a 12, or is it just supply chain?
Supply chain issues, yeah. There's nothing unique about it. We just can't get pickup trucks.
People want pickup trucks, so we can't get
one. Driving us crazy.
Yep.
We have the gym equipment upgrade. This is a smaller ticket item. It's addressing the basketball hoops in the Dated Gym, which are currently operated via manual crank. You can see Adam. Showing how it is raised and lowered. It's a manual pass. It risks stripping out or damaging the set screws that raise and lower the hoops. So the idea would be to automate that process via installation of motors. It would be controlled through a keypad on the wall at a cost of about $20,000. This would be what I consider like phase one of the gym equipment upgrades. Phase two would address the curtains. They're extremely slow to go up and down. So the idea would be to address the hoops this year, have the keypad installed, and integrate the new curtains the following year. Would it open up some more ability for people to operate it easily without having to use this crane, and speed up the process of turning the gym over for different age groups of basketball or different events like pickleball, then basketball, then volleyball, or what have you.
This has been on the list for probably 8 years, and if you've been pushing it down, now it's time to advance it.
Next, we have the IT hardware and technology, a budget of $75,000. This will cover our IT needs throughout the year. John, I just want to speak to specifics.
Yeah, those are the big items that we are host for the CRB disaster recovery event. That one was going back to 2016, so that's really the one that we can't wait on much longer. Management server also probably about 4 or 5 years old at this point, so those are all the costs there. Ultimately, the switch is another component here, and then PC replacements we're trying to just get. We added some warranties this year, really just trying to smooth it over, you know, 3 year, and extending stuff. The max we can go on that is about 4 years of warranty. So just trying to get an even spread on the PC replacements and warranties.
Any questions on IT? And then last, just wanted to touch on one project we're giving consideration, just so the board's aware that we were looking into it, just have a conversation and get a temperature. We were looking into electric vehicle charging stations. The cost of the charging stations themselves are not cost prohibitive. You can lease a unit for $2,500 a year, and that includes all maintenance and support. The prohibitive cost, in my opinion, is the $60,000 to $80,000 infrastructure cost on the front end in order to get one of those units installed. Our situation here, unfortunately, is limited in terms of available power. In order to accommodate a charging station, we would need to tap into what limited power exists in the facility, punch out a foundation wall, and directionally bore or trench out to the parking lot at a cost of $60,000 to $80,000. I don't think it's prudent to spend that type of upfront cost without some grant funding, which I haven't been able to find any available funding at the moment. This would be a project that would line up much more, much better with a future either maintenance or baseball field renovation where you're upgrading electrical service when you're doing major site work and then you tie this type of project at the same time. I don't think to spend a standalone $80,000 to get a electrical vehicle charging station would be a wise decision, but I did want to at least let everybody know that we were looking into it. And if you otherwise, I'm happy to hear commentary on it.
The village has some downtown.
And they're not all, they're usually not used. So far, I think at this point, there's not, the need has not, I mean, most people in Glencoe have charging stations at their houses, so, you know, that's when their charging is overnight, so.
Well, that would be a future consideration when it, I think, would line up with a larger project.
Yes, eventually, when we do the maintenance facility, we'll look for, to really, we hope things advance enough that we can put in charger stations for our own vehicles and for maybe lawnmowers, maybe blowers, everything, you know, look at solar for that building, make it a, you know, LED certified facility. At that time, wrapping that all together would be, and then at that point, we'll probably have to do more with the lighting at the fields and redoing that. Just makes more sense at that point.
I agree. We know it's coming at some point, but it just doesn't seem like we want it.
We're forcing it right now.
Yeah. What's that going to do?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. If people say, oh, there's grants out there. Yeah, not for infrastructure. So so there you go.
Right.
All right.
So that wraps up the proposed projects. So I'll give a little summary of the budget amounts. So our carryover project summary on the left column, we have the community hall, the truck center replacement, and the early childhood structural study. Total carryover cost of $135,600 for the projects that were budgeted for this year, but are renewable for next year. Proposed project summary, on the left you see the table, left column showing the proposed projects at a total new project cost of $545,000. Combined with our carryover brings us to $608,600 for Fund 65 proposed projects for fiscal year 24. On the right, you'll see the graph showing our expenditures out of Fund 65 over the previous 5 years, as well as our proposed, our projected for this year of $500,000 and our proposed for next year of $608,600. You can see there's a little bit of balance over the 5 years, but the 5-year average was $555,000 in proposed or expenditures out of Fund 65. So the 545 of new kind of aligns with that amount.
We also we didn't put in Fund 67, which is our Watts and I believe Lakefront.
Cribble,
yeah.
Oh.
So those projects are also already budgeted and approved by the board. These are the ones with the remaining.
So I think given the total new, you know, is less than some of our past years with inflation, it's almost like we're cutting back on new capital spending. Am I misinterpreting that?
Also, the graph on the right, we didn't delve into what amount of that was carried over from those previous years.
Right.
Okay, so like
it's about, we've been doing about $500,000 every year is really what the budget was for the last 5 years.
So this is essentially in line with
it is totally in line,
the new reality.
Yeah, that's right. So 535 is,
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, these are all reasonable.
Very reasonable.
About.
Yeah.
Yeah. Families.
They're not controversial at all.
No. You know, oh, we have money, we're going to spend it. These are all well thought out purchases.
Yeah. So as Lisa mentioned, I didn't prepare a slide for Fund 67 because that's kind of already set in stone with Watts and Cripple. But here's just a quick little summary of Fund 69 master plan projects. In the past, we've used for playgrounds, Connect Glencoe. Things of that nature. The gas kiln was budgeted for this year, as we talked about. That project is going to be carried over for fiscal year 2024. And then we have Lakefront Park as the other large project to come out of Fund 69. So the Fund 69 budget proposed for 2024 will be $1,090,000.
And why is that the kiln being carried over again?
So the lead time the unit is months right now, so I feel like a broken record, but
the lead time. When do you think it's going to be installed and ready to go, would you have to guess, because you just don't know?
We are lining it up for shutdown
August
year, that gives us that 3 week or so break of programming in the ceramic studio, which is when it would allow us to line up. So ideally, we'll get the unit ordered, 7 month lead time, we'll have it on hand late spring, summer. We'll bid the actual work after the new year and put into the bid documents the requirement of work to take place between August, whatever the 3 week period is.
And we'll send you all these slides. So after tomorrow, I'll email those out to you, this whole PowerPoint, so you have it. Should anybody ask you any questions? It'll be in the minutes also, but I'll get to you before that. Any questions? So hopefully we have a good delivery on our goods that we're going to order. Get some of the stuff done this year.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, thank you, Kyle. Very good. Lisa Shepherd now and John will lead the discussion on our policy review.
So you're going to see a lot of these coming up because we're going to start reviewing all of our policies. Slowly but surely, and not to overwhelm you, we're going to try to bring them in slow doses. So I'm going to turn this one. This is just taking our existing policy and bringing it up to new standards. So, John?
Yep, really just updating our capital expense policy and really what the main part of this is we're moving toward, just aligning with the GSA rates on a per diem basis, which really eases the burden for both requesting reimbursement and just the administration of it, we're able to provide a per diem up to the GSA rate and not have to deal with so much tracking overseas. That's really the main change here, just brings it in with more industry knowing a lot of our districts have gone this route. We worked, I was able to review a couple of the policies and pretty much aligned with what most of the districts are doing from that perspective. So just, again, making it making it a little easier to facilitate for both the administrative office and the employees. Making the IPR right now is really helpful for us.
If there's no question, we'll advance this for approval at committee under consent agenda items. Okay.
That's it, John?
Oh, that's it. Just one today.
Okay. Oh yeah. You're going to spoon feed us a little bit of time. I appreciate that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Okay. On to other business. Lisa Shepherd will lead the discussion.
Yeah. The only thing I have to bring up is that we are opening bids on
Friday
for Watts. So you know, keep your fingers crossed, your toes crossed, everything crossed.
That done.
That we have more favorable results. So you know, there will be higher than. Particularly hoping they're lower than last time. So we also did hear that the Cook County tax second installment should be...
The extended rate should be available within the next couple of weeks. They gave November 1 through 11. You can expect to see my check today. I'm going to check every day.
Yeah. And supposedly the bills will be going out by the 15th or something like that. I don't know. So just you know that those hopefully will be... We have some hope. But we did hear, unfortunately, bad news that this may occur again next year. because they're upgrading the systems again. So we just have to keep on managing that. And that. So other than that, I would want to thank staff because they did a phenomenal job. I would say the high holiday for park districts is Halloween. And they did a phenomenal job. We had 760 come to our Halloween event on Friday night, which is probably almost double what we had pre-pandemic. So luckily we had nice weather. We were able to drive, you know, drive people outside. I have to say we had a meeting like 2 days before, and we found out the weather was going to be nice, and we found out that we had the numbers kept on creeping up, and I'm like, can we do a hayride? They're like, we can make that happen, and they made it happen. So by borrowing Winnetka's hay wagon, so phenomenal job. So the people were raving about it, and then we had a trunk or treat yesterday for the early childhood department. So very successful too. So
I was working out myself. I'm stuck in the hayride. So I was like, what's the, I asked them what was going on, but I think I agree, and I think just the community as a whole is such a nice weekend. Like the Friday in the village. So many kids were out. It was like they'd never seen candy. They literally could not walk down the sidewalk. Everyone ran out of candy.
Yeah.
And I think it goes to show like how many younger kids have moved into this community, because that's what is geared toward obviously like 6 and under. And I just think there's so many more new families.
It is
yeah,
totally
do you think
true.
That's really, I agree with you. That's what I see, and in my neighborhood, it's had like a complete turnover. Is that supported by any data, or is it just sort of I feel that there's more? I mean, the schools would know, obviously.
I mean, the last year, everyone had to wear masks. The year before, it was just outside, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is like the first normal Halloween event in
years. Yeah, so that too.
Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, everyone I knew was there.
Yeah.
I was saying to Kyle, I had gone before the pandemic too, and it was interesting. This felt less chaotic and less crowded than back in 2019 to me. And maybe because it was spread out.
It was spread out.
Outside in other rooms. Because I remember one year, I think there was pizza in here, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah.
And this hallway was just such a jam at the stairwell, and I didn't have that sense of...
Did a great job of spreading it out throughout the whole facility. We did away with the food. Yeah,
Nate is unbelievable. Kudos to Nate, man.
Yeah.
He is really on top of his game.
He's built a lot of credibility with people who now specifically
wanting
to come to his event.
He thinks of everything and spreads it out. And,
right.
You know,
we
did away with the pizza because... To be honest, it was just such a hassle.
It was chaotic.
It was chaotic. So
that's right.
And just all those hands and the pizzas now.
Yeah, see now it's just so you know, pizza pits at home come.
Pizza at home.
Or after. We had the food truck if they wanted to purchase it, really starving, but moving outside helped a lot, but just spreading out. We used every single room in this building, not early childhood because there's restrictions there, but it was a really good event.
And there were new features.
New features, you'll always see new features in all the events. So that's
the dance party was a really cool dark dance party.
Yeah,
we were there for about 20 minutes.
Yeah,
yeah.
So we'll look to probably move that up
here
next year. And
yeah,
switch things around.
Put
that
in. Yeah.
Oh, it's
that
fun.
Oh,
look at all these balloons and have these really like giant balloons.
Yeah.
And then the dance party.
Nate was smart enough to say pre-order a whole bunch of balloons done, so if the lines got too long, people could just opt to get a balloon.
Great.
So just little things like that that he thinks of.
And it was his most successful financial budget.
Yes.
And being here, so we had greater quality and also more revenue and less expenses. So
yeah,
that's great.
Really good.
The PTO complimented Nate as well on the movie night, That's like the second time someone's come up to me and said something to just say yes.
He really is very helpful to that community partner. I think that's...
Yeah. I mean, we put that in his title on purpose, community relations, because that's how we can help.
Yeah.
We just have to be careful that people don't come to rely on him to do their events. So he's been really good about, you know, doing that balance. Like, hey, I'm not doing it for you, but I'll teach you how to or work with you. Yeah. But I'm not going to do it like, you know.
Exactly.
So, because we don't want to burn him out, but he's really...
That's true.
And he likes to help with that kind of stuff. So, and by doing that partnership, we already said next year at the beginning of school year, how about we do that back-to-school dance? At Hawk, and we'll do the band, and let's have it all there instead of doing two separate ones and things like that. So, so more partnerships will go on.
We're going to move to the fall, part of the PTO. We found out that the PTO can get the movie licenses for $50, while we're charged $500. So we're actually having to sponsor the movies, and then we'll do the in-kind work. So
Smart.
Yeah.
Well, and it gets dark earlier in the fall.
It does. It's just so hard to do them in the summer. When you do them early, it takes forever.
Right.
Can't start until 10. No, but thank you for that feedback. He's been very, very popular. And he's including all sorts of community groups in our events, which is what we want to do, right? Infuse them. So Friends of Green Bay Trail were there. GYS was there at tables. And we have a... Hallmark a Writer's Theater was there also at a room. Hallmark Holidays already, you know, bringing them into that. So
great,
it's exciting. So
fantastic, great job.
That's it. That's all I have.
Wonderful. If that is all, I entertain a motion to adjourn at 8:33.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor.
Aye.
Great. Motion passes. Thank you, everyone.